Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again Patrick Highsmith, and he's here today to introduce Timberline Resources. That's a recent new sponsor to this show, and I'm really pleased to have him here to talk about it. It is a company that I've added to my newsletter as well, and looking to pick up some shares myself as soon as I can here and get around to it. Patrick is the president and CEO of Timberline Resources. That's a mineral exploration resource development company focused on gold and copper discoveries in north central Nevada. And he has, of course, been with us before. He has a very rich background as a professional geologist, mining executive, over 29 years of experience in exploration, operations, business development. He's been with some of the big guys, Rio Tinto, BH Billiton, Newmont, several other companies, Fortescue Metals, for example, and he's worked on more than 250 projects around the world, leading teams through creative transactions and new discoveries, scoping, and pre-feasibility studies. He also has experience in the capital markets. So in my view, Patrick has all of those talents and skills that are needed to head up a junior mining company and do it successfully. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us again.
Good afternoon, Jay. Good to be here.
It's always good to have you with us, and I should tell our listeners that Timberline trades in Canada under the symbol TBR. You can buy it down here in the States under TLRS. TLRS. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Patrick, but I've got you for 43.5 million shares, and I saw you trading around 17 cents in U.S., which, if that share count is right, you're only about a $7, $8 million market cap, U.S. money. Does that sound right?
Sorry, Jay, you probably, because we're a U.S. issuer, it might look funny to you when you pull up share information. Our total shares outstanding is around 140 million.
Wow.
So it's
okay.
a venerable company, as a matter of fact.
Well, 140 million shares, I guess I have to be a little more careful and check my numbers. But even so, at 17 cents, it's still a very small market cap, so we'd be looking at something a little over $20 million or so, I guess, right? So, maybe a little more than that, but still a baby. Let's put it that way. So I've known the name Timberline for some time. I believe you've sort of shifted gears in recent years, though. I think, can you talk about the history of the company?
Yeah, very, very briefly, Jay. The company does go back to the early 2000s. A lot of people will know of Timberline, and there are a couple reasons for that. We are a U.S. issuer, and in those days, we were an NYSE markets listed company. Now, there's some logic to that because the company was known as a developer of larger projects, really an incipient producer almost in the case of, say, Butte Highlands in Montana, a polymetallic deposit there. So it had been on the bigger board and then weathering some tough cycles, of course, as we do in this business. It did a pretty sizable transaction by acquiring Staccato Gold Resources in 2010. And that, in fact, brought in a big Carlin-type project called Eureka. And, in fact, when I was at Newmont managing business development at Newmont, I'd had a look at Staccato's assets in Eureka. So with that acquisition, Timberline was a multi-project company with this Eureka project coming up as a prominent project within the company, but still working in Montana, working elsewhere in Nevada. But in about 2015, the focus sort of shifted entirely to Nevada. And then in about 2020, Jay, it really became a pure gold play once again. It had copper and polymetallic projects in it. And with that focus, it wasn't long after that that Quentin Henney and I had a look at this early in the summer of 2020. And really about 15 months ago, he and I sort of facilitated, I think, working with Timberline and bringing in Crescat Capital into a sizable financing in which we raised about $3.7 million U.S. I joined the company as CEO subsequent to that. And we focused that treasury pretty much entirely on what we believe to be much higher grade potential at the Eureka project than had currently existed in the resource there, which was published back in 2013. And we were on record back in the day, Quentin and myself as well, believing to see potential for more than 3 million ounces of gold at the Eureka project alone. And we do have a couple of more projects in Nevada, but Eureka is the big one, and it's our focus.
Okay, that's your focus, Nevada, and Carlin-style targets. I guess it's on the Battle Mountain Trend, isn't it? Towards the southern end of the Battle Mountain Trend?
That's right, Jay. We like trends. We like being where the gold is. And the Battle Mountain Eureka Trend is one of the most prolific gold-producing belts in Nevada. And, of course, Eureka District is near the south end of that. It's got a lot of historic production. It also produced a lot of silver, lead, zinc back in the day. And these are Carlin-type deposits, Jay, and we've talked about that probably before. These are sediment-hosted deposits that tend to have favorable characteristics that can drive good economics. For instance, they are often bulk mineable deposits. They often have very attractive grades. And in fact, if you look at Nevada, the majority of Nevada's 5 million ounce production comes from Carlin type deposits and usually on these major trends and from the major companies. And that's why we're there with our Eureka project.
So maybe you could talk about people, because people are very, very important. You have the technical skills there, I believe, Patrick. Could you just touch on that a moment?
Yeah, the team at Timberline is worthy of some note. I mean, we've streamlined this board down to only 5 persons, and yet we still have well over 150 person years of experience on that board. And importantly, Jay, we also have about 20% ownership of the stock at the board and management level. So when you combine that with great shareholders like Crescat, we've got a lot of shares in good hands. In addition to technical folks who've been around and well-known in the industry, Dave Mathewson's one of our technical advisors and was previously on the board. Lee Freeman is our chairman, well-known industry, both management expert and consultant and technical person. We recently added Pam Saxton to the board, and she's our sort of lead finance director, and she's been in the leadership at Thompson Creek Metals, Franco-Nevada, Person Gold, Amex Gold. So she chairs our audit committee and adds that non-technical, you know, strength that we're looking to bolster. On the ground, our technical team is led by Dr. Steve Osterberg, PhD with more than 30 years of experience. And Steve and I first worked together at BHP in the 1990s. So it's a team that we know each other well, diverse experience, really good, strong senior leadership. And we've added some new talent, and some of the audience may have seen some of our recent geologic maps and cross sections, which have been sort of updated quite a bit. And that effort's been led by a brilliant structural geologist by the name of Dr. Chris Klinkscales, who's been out leading our mapping efforts. And so, you know, there's new blood in the team, and Chris, who's sort of, you know, mid-30s, and then there's the more gray hairs. And, of course, Quentin over at Crescat is an often, you know, technical consultant for us with whom we brainstorm and talk about these ideas and targets. So really thrilled with the team, and it has been through a bit of a transformation to lean up and add the strength where we need it and keep that technical team strong.
You have a drill program that I think you're getting close to finishing now. Can you talk about that, and will there be some results coming out soon?
Yes, finally there will, and what a drill program it's been. It was dramatically affected by the availability of drilling crews, and of course we all know the assay labs in Nevada are quite busy. And let me just say one thing. You know, we have a resource already in the Eureka project at the deposit called Lookout Mountain, and that's been published in compliance with 43-101 since 2013. It's about a 500,000 ounces of gold, Jay, near surface, and it is low grade. It's about 0.018 ounces per ton or 0.62 grams per ton, but that's in the measured and indicated categories and includes a lot of oxide. So the reason I bring that up now is that was the focus for the company at first. Let's see if a smaller heap leach operation can be put into production on the strength of that foundational resource. When we came in and sort of shifted gears a little bit, we realize there's a high-grade core there, not only in the resource footprint, but to the east of it in an area called the water well zone, just down dip of the resource, but outside of it. More consistent grades of 2 to 5 grams per ton have been drilled there since its discovery in 2015. So that's been the emphasis of the drill program we're currently involved in. We are literally about to collar the final hole in the program. Jay, it'll bring us to over 21,000 feet of drilling, about 6,500 meters, and the focus of that has been the water well zone, and we've reported, I think, five holes back in October from the first sort of phase of this year's drilling, and we hit some good numbers. The water well zone turned up 11 meters at 2.36 grams, another interval within that of 6 meters of 3 grams included, another thicker interval, 16.76 meters at almost 2 grams, that included 3 meters of higher grade at 4.56 grams. So this water well zone is starting to take shape, Jay. So what we did is we focused a lot of holes there so that when this drilling is complete, we expect to see the geometry of that water well zone just east of the resource, potentially, of course, accretive additions to the resource. And the other exciting element, and there was a press release in early December when our another target, the Oswego trend, really came alive. And here again, Jay, it's this huge project, you know, 28 square miles, over 70 square kilometers of ground that's seen exploration in multiple generations, but no work had been done at Oswego since about 1991. And we had done some surface sampling there that suggested there was a long area of over 12 grams per ton at surface along a structure. We returned there with some mechanized exploration this time. We put in channels for which we used diamond saws so we could cut this very hard silicified rock along this fault. And we also brought in an excavator for a few trenches. And we press released in December that we did, in fact, confirm intervals of up to 26 meters of 14.4 grams of gold at surface, another interval of 27 meters of 12.02 grams at the surface. Now, those were along a fault, Jay, in really hard rock that we could not cut across with the excavator. So, in other words, they're not true thickness. We would literally have to blast that to sample it perpendicular. So, so there's a nice area of potential to the east there. We don't know the true thickness of that, and your audience can look at maps in our presentations to see that. But we did cut some trenches across it as well, showing more oxide mineralization at surface over true widths of 8 to about 11 meters, ranging in grade from 1.7 grams per ton of oxide up to 3.63 grams per ton of oxide over 10.7 meters. So what that's telling you is you have this Oswego structure, highly mineralized. When those results came back, we were able to mobilize the drill rig over there in the middle of a drill program from the water well zone, just 1 kilometer to the east, so quite close, a little over half a mile. And we put 6 holes through that Oswego fault zone, RC drill holes through that structure, and those will be some of the results that will really start kind of flooding out here in Q1, Jay. I believe we're sitting at more than, for approximately 18 holes. Various stages of, we've still got core being cut. We've got samples awaiting pickup from the lab. We've got, obviously, a lot of them in sample preparation and in the lab. So the news flow will start in the next couple of weeks before the end of January, and then it'll continue right through the first quarter, and the highlights will be water well zone. Did we fill in a footprint there to see that nice volume of better-grade mineralization taking shape? And Oswego, can we confirm in drilling down dip the grades that we see at surface that are so exciting at Oswego in an area that, some guys had found some good gold back in 1991, but no one had been there since. So a lot of excitement there. And I guess if there's an upside to the slowdown in drilling and assay labs, Jay, it's that it leads to a good first quarter news flow as the results finally do come in.
Right. Well, we'll certainly be looking forward to that. And it sounds like we could have some very pleasant surprises, perhaps wake up the market to the potential of Timberline. Just one last thing. How about financing? Are you okay going through, or are you going to need to raise some more money in this year?
Yeah, we had a good raise in the summer, Jay, and at our financial year end, which was end of September, for which we filed our 10K annual report. You'll see a cash balance of well over $3.3 million. And we've estimated that at the end of this drill program, when all the work is completed, we'll have around U.S. $1 million. And, of course, a lot of data to crunch on and a lot of news flow to get through before we would need any more money, Jay. We expect and plan for a very big summer season. But as we're demonstrating right now, we can drill in winter if we need to. Great conditions out there right now. So we're in good shape for the foreseeable future and a lot of news flow to feed out to shareholders and followers over the first quarter here.
All right, Patrick. Well, thank you very much. It's a lot to look forward to, and we'll look to keep up with the story, that's for sure.